Hey, what's really going on? It's Boots Riley. I'm the writer and director of Sorry to Bother You. You are now listening to two dope teachers and a microphone. Keep it locked right here. No texting.
What's good, Two Dope Nation?
How y'all doing?
It's a sunny day. Is it sunny over where you live?
Yes, I woke up this morning. It was nice and sunny. The sun, yeah. The sun woke me up, actually, at like 5 o'clock. Did you know the sun comes up at like 5 o'clock?
Yeah, and that's where my dog gets up. My dog gets me up at about 5 o'clock. And I'm like, dang, dog, but it's all good. Yeah, I mean, we don't live that. It's funny. Is it sunny over there? We live like 10 minutes away from each other. So
you never know, though. Some days, you never know. You never know.
Some days. Well, yeah, like, did you get that downpour yesterday?
Yeah.
Okay, so
I was out on my bike when it started. So
strengthens that point. I ran by your house, not did like you? By your house, but by your block during my 20-mile training run on Saturday.
And that's part of me. I was like, where does he run? Like, 20 miles is a lot of running. I'm like, that's
a really long way. So you know where I ran?
Where?
I ran to school.
That's what I was wondering. So you ran all the way from your house to the school?
I ran from my house basically to within a couple blocks of the school. Yeah. And then I headed up 6th Avenue or 8th Avenue, because it's really important that you run against traffic.
Yes.
So if our veers off the road, you can jump out of the way.
I appreciate that safety precaution. What's that? I appreciate your safety precaution.
No, it's really important. You ride your bike with traffic, you run in traffic. That's how that works. Yeah, 20 miles is a long way. I'm actually finalizing my route for the whole thing, which is in about 3 weeks. And so the route will probably take me to north, to Lincoln, to south, to east, and then will culminate at Manual.
Nice.
So that's nice. Where it was. But yeah, I thought about stopping by, but I'm like, nah, it's like 6:45 in the morning on a Saturday.
Thank
I'm definitely
you. I was up. I had the grill going.
Oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. You had the grill going? What were you doing?
Yeah, I had people over. I have a fam over.
Oh, okay.
On Saturday.
No, I'm talking about 6:45 in the morning.
Yeah, no, I was up, man. I had my ribs on.
Oh, okay.
I was trying to make sure they were done when everybody got here.
I thought you were saying.
You know, you go to a party and the food, like, you have to wait for them to finish making the food.
Yeah.
Like, you're not,
all right. No, we're Mexican. We don't do that either. No, yeah, no. I thought you meant that you had people like at your house at 6:45.
No, not yet. No. Yeah. That would have been early. That's going hard.
Yeah, that's going real hard. Well, listen, it is summer of 2020, if you could call it that. And we are here. My name is Gerardo Munoz.
It's your boy, Kevin Adams.
As you may have gathered at this point, and we are merely two public school teachers in quarantine with a microphone and a Ringer app, which allows us to continue to bring content to you during this very anxious time. We're starting our summer mixtape campaign, Kev.
Yes, summer mixtape season. It's even in summer a pandemic. It can't stop, won't stop, like Diddy said.
That's right. So we are Summer Revolutionary Mixtape 2020. We do this project. We've done this project since last year, thanks to NEA's Racial and Social Justice Conference, and for the support that they had in connecting us with dope educators doing incredible work in their communities and beyond. And what do you view as the purpose of doing a summer mixtape? Why do we call it a mixtape and not just have it be part of the season or have it just be another episode? Why do we call it a mixtape?
I think, you know, if it's a mixtape, you don't have to be as formal, first of all, like a mixtape culture, right? The songs don't have to be as long, right? You could just do like the hottest bars.
Yep.
So like the episodes might not be as long, but I also think like it's a variety of voices that you're going to be hearing, you know, and not just ours, right? Yep. Which we usually, it's usually just us. Every time, every once in a while we have a guest, you know, if we're lucky. But this, I think that's the difference between the summer mixtape is it's a lot of guests. So you're going to get a mix of kind of folks who are taking action, you know, to disrupt the system. And I just think, you know, it was fun last year and inspiring. And I think it's a way that we can kind of keep that inspiration and hope up and also document some of the amazing work going on by educators and non-educators to really create a more equitable school system and a anti-racist world.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when I think back to where you and I were both feeling a year ago, well, first of all, we thought a year ago, we're like, well, it can't get really much worse than this, right? We just went on strike. And yeah, that's the last time I'm ever going to say anything like that.
That's right.
But about a year ago, you know, I think I had personally hit a little bit of a wall. And I don't know if this is just what happens when you pass your 20th year teaching, where you're just kind of like, do I really want to still do this? Do I really want to still do this? Do I really want to do this? Am I getting
years is a long time?
It's like, yeah, it's a long time. And, you know, and so, you know, that's that inevitable kind of internal conversation I'm having with myself. And then we go to Houston. We do 2 days of live recordings with people just doing incredible work in their communities. And it was just so invigorating. So to your point, it provides a little bit of inspiration. The other thing I think about, like with a mixtape, is I think about two different types of mixtapes, right? There's the one kind of mixtape that you give the person that you love, right? We yes. love our Two Dope Nation, and we have selected some tracks for you that we want you to be able to listen to.
Like
anytime.
You got to understand these tracks if, because I love them and I love you. So we just all got to be on the same page.
That's right. But I also think about in hip hop how mixtapes are experimental, right? I tried That's some right. stuff, you know, and now that, you know, now that we are privileged enough to be at home receiving compensation and, you know, not having to worry about kind of the day to day survival that a lot of our brothers and sisters in the community have to worry about. I think we owe it to the community to do a little bit of reflection and a little bit of thinking about, okay, things have slowed down a little bit. There's a lot of stress out there. There's a lot of anxiety out there, but we don't have to be in front of the kids every single day trying to get ourselves out of bed, get ourselves to work, get ourselves from class to class, get observations done, go to meetings. We don't have that moment to moment accountability at this point. And so it allows us to sit back and examine new ways of doing things. And so we're very excited that we'll be bringing you some folks who are going to help us reflect differently on the work that we're doing. So like with any mixtape, you just get your glass of lemonade, right? And put your feet up, kick back and listen to what is happening. If you're listening to us for the first time, welcome to Two Dope Nation. We got 4 seasons worth of content that you can find on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. Although Spotify is being a little weird with us. I've had to like resubmit like constantly, and I don't know what Spotify clean up your act.
Joe Rogan's messing with us now that he got all the Spotify money.
That's what I'm saying.
Joe Rogan's messing with us.
It ain't right.
Leave some bandwidth for us, Joe.
Exactly. Come on, Joe. Do better.
You can't be talking about MMA that much.
Exactly. God. So we've got that. If we ever pass him on the podcast, like downloads list, I will talk so much mess that it won't even be funny.
If we pass him on the podcast list, we're going to be talking a lot of mess because that means we got a lot of money.
A lot. That's right. That's right. I don't know, man. I feel like the amount of money I have is not proportionate to how much mess I talk.
But if you imagine you had $100 million, the amount of mess you could talk.
Oh man, it would be wild.
For $25 million, I'll talk just as much mess.
For $25, I'll talk a bunch of mess.
That's
like,
right. Right.
Like it's easy. I'm not expensive.
I'm not.
So we've got content that you can catch up with us. You can also follow us on Twitter at Two Dope Teachers, on Instagram at Two Dope Teachers, and you can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/Two Dope Teachers and a mic. But we are here. We're merely these two public school teachers who are trying to figure things out, trying to reflect, trying to simultaneously think about what next year looks like and also not think about it.
Yep.
Which is a really interesting thing. And you know, we got some projects in the canister that we're ready to do. We've had a fun few days, haven't we?
Yeah, definitely. You want to tell them about the experience we got to have? What was that?
Saturday.
Yeah.
See, we're losing track of the days. That's how you can tell we're teachers on quarantine.
Yes.
So yeah, we appeared on the video on the All of the Above video podcast with our new brothers from another state, Jeffrey Barrett and Manuel Rustin.
Shout out to the homies.
You know, it was funny because like watching their content, I was kind of like, wait a minute, they're us.
I was like, wow, that's like, so weird.
It's so weird to see other versions of yourselves, but they also with their unique flares and flair and tendencies, you know, and stuff like that. But it was just really interesting when you connect with. It was like, what was that Will Ferrell and what's his name movie? Did we just become best friends? I think we did.
It was totally like that.
It really was. And, you know, their podcast is amazing. They have an audio and a video podcast. Go over to YouTube and go to Apple Podcasts and Spotify, subscribe and like their work. All of the Above is a video podcast that they do a lot like how we do it. They do it in their school buildings and, with support of the things around them. We talked a little bit about being unicorns, being male teachers of color, and also dealing with the dynamic of COVID and the uprisings against law enforcement that have happened across the country the last few weeks. That was so much fun. We're going to have those guys on. They will be part of our mixtape, but we have some other guests that we're just kind of like holding off a little bit so we can create a little bit of a buzz, right?
Right. That's right.
Yeah. So that was really fun.
Keep the streets watching.
That's right. They got to know we out here, right?
That's right.
Speaking of summer mixtape, we have track one.
Track one.
Yeah, tell people about track one.
Track one is a very special track. I think it's been in works for a minute, right? We've been trying to hook up with this individual for a minute. But as of late, this brother has been extremely busy. You know, I can't help but turn on any of like the anytime I go to like any of these national what we call the mainstream, the fake news media. Yeah. I can't help but see him, so I know he's a real brother if the fake news is reporting on him. Yes. You know, and so near and dear to both of us because he represents a high school that is near and dear. But our first episode is with the brother Tay Anderson. And if y'all don't know, Tay Anderson is the youngest elected African-American official in all of Colorado history. He was elected to the Denver School Board last fall with, what did he say? He said 67,000 people, 82% of the vote, you know, wanted and picked him.
82% of precincts, right?
And 51% in a three-candidate race, so he has the plurality. More people voted for him than the other two candidates, right? Yep. And so we got the homie Tay for y'all. Director Tay Anderson from the Denver School Board, you know, and he's really just telling us some incredible stuff about his story to activism and the things that he's been doing. So we really think you guys are going to dig this episode.
Yeah. And if you've been paying attention, you know, Brother Director Tay has put into motion a lot of really important, conversations and initiatives in his barely 6 months in office, including, the implementation of all gender restrooms in Denver public schools, including a call for ethnic studies as a graduation requirement, black studies as a graduation requirement. He's also, you know, he was also instrumental in the change of the neighborhood formerly named after KKK member Ben Stapleton, and was able to motivate the MCA over here to take that name down. It was pretty amazing to drive through the neighborhood and see the name being scraped off of buildings.
I loved it.
Taken down. And so there's a conversation about what to name it. Mosley Park is the front runner, according to a Facebook poll. I also think Deerfield would be cool because Deerfield was the first all black town that was established in the state of Colorado. But yeah, there's a lot of possibilities there. And the thing that we'll talk about with Tay a little bit is how it is that he shows up as who he is every single day, and is just kind of fearless. He's been a lightning rod. He posts the hate email every now and then that he gets, and he's relentless and he's undaunted. By the, what do we call them? Haters, that are out there.
And I think he exemplifies what we are trying to do, as educators of color. Like, we want our students to self-actualize like Tay has, right? He is the vision. He's the dream, right? And so I think it's really important for our young listeners to really hear what Tay said and to really understand all of what they are capable of too.
Absolutely. And, I was really excited for him to win the election. But what I'm even more excited about is how many young black and brown children watch this happen, have shaken his hands. We're not handshaking anytime soon at this point, but who shook his hand, who met him, and who look at that and say, wow, that's actually that somebody like me. So maybe people like me can be elected officials and make real change.
He's been in your classroom, right?
He came in my classroom. It was great.
Yeah, he's been in my classroom. He was great. Talked to the kids, show them love. It's great. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he visited, I think, something like 85 schools before the pandemic shut things down. Just really impressive. And the thing is that people are talking about the Board of Education more than they ever have. And that's huge. That's huge. A couple of my favorite Tayisms. The first, when he was first elected, he jumped on a Denver educational discussion board and his first comment was, "New board, who dis?" Good stuff. And then there was another incident where somebody was like, "Tay Anderson has a lot to say about blah, blah, blah. But where were you 10 years ago when we were doing this stuff?" And Tay was like, "I was in the sixth grade."
I'm sorry.
Maybe not the most woke 11-year-old.
I had math homework that day.
I had math homework. I had to go to school. Sorry, I would have attended. So this is it's just really exciting. Are we ready to let the people hear it, or do we want to?
Let the people. Got to give the people what they want, as they say.
I feel like 18 minutes of anticipation is enough, don't you?
That's it. Yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, sit back, relax, get your lemonade or the equivalent, and listen to track one of the 2020 Summer Revolutionary Mixtape. Good afternoon. Is it afternoon? It is afternoon.
Just a couple minutes.
Past afternoon. Good afternoon, 2Dope Nation. Welcome to 2Dope Teachers and a Mic. My name is Gerardo Munoz.
Your boy Kevin Adams.
And we are coming at you with the first installment of our Summer 2020 Revolutionary Mixtape. The first artist we would like to present is a director, an elected official who has really, really, been the subject of a lot of conversation here in the city of Denver.
Nationwide. Not just Denver.
That's true. For me, it's hard to imagine a world outside of Denver. So, being from here. It just gives us great pleasure, and it's an honor to have this gentleman on the show. Want to introduce everyone to Mr. Director Tay Anderson.
Woo! What's up, Tay?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. So Tay, we're gonna go through these things. There's so much to say when it comes to discussing the impact that you have made as an elected school board member. In how many months have you been on the job?
I believe I've been here officially for around 6.5 months.
About six and a half months. And we would have you list off everything that has happened under your directorship. But I think there wouldn't be time for anything else on the show, in my opinion. But some of the highlights that we've seen is addressing the concept of gender neutrality for restrooms in the Denver Public Schools, terminating DPS's contract with the Denver Police Department, initiating important conversations about what we name things in this city, with the change of the name Stapleton, you know, movement that culminated in an incredible rally on Saturday, and addressing mascots in the name of schools in Denver. So I think the most compelling thing right now is to hear a little bit of your story. And we've shared some of this on our social media, but Tay, how did you land where you are today?
Well, today really came because I was a student in the Denver Public Schools. And at the time, board member Happy Haynes came to student leadership and said that there was a decision about Manual High School becoming a 612 without the knowledge or consent of the students. And then I said, well, how do we get our voices represented on the school board? She responded very condescendingly and said, hey, you need to run and win like the rest of us. So 4 years later, I replaced her on the Denver school board.
I'm sorry, what high school did you say?
Manual High School, the best school in the city and county of Denver in the state of Colorado.
You are talking about the Manual
High School. The Manual High School.
The Manual High School. The three of us all have a connection there. Kevin did his student teaching there.
Yes, sir.
And I graduated from there in 1994. And so it's good to have a panel of bolts, right? It's good. So for you, it was in DPS's program for student voice and leadership where you first had the idea of running for office, or was this something that you'd thought about previously in your youth?
No, it was actually through that program that led me to running for school board, because in my senior year of high school, I was homeless. And so I said, how do I give students a voice? And reflecting on the conversation I had with Happy Haynes at the time, and decided to run for school board in 2017, ran against Vice President Jennifer Bacon and the incumbent former director, Rochelle Espiritu, and I lost. I came in the third place with 6,200 votes. But going into education, becoming a Denver educator for a short time, and restorative practices and campus safety really led me to running again and just serving on the school board now, and earned 67,213 votes.
That's amazing. You are so impressive, Tay, and it's been really awesome to watch your journey from your first run for the board to the second time. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, are you the youngest elected official in Colorado?
No, I'm the youngest African American elected official. There's a gentleman who has me beaten, like Fort Morgan or Fort Lupton, who ran for city council at 19 and he won. Oh. And then, yeah, so he got me there.
But hey, I think you got more of a plurality of votes, so a greater like number of people voting for you overall. But yeah. how do you handle it? How do you approach it? You know, I think for young people, a lot of our listeners or some students, you know, who are interested in ways to amplify their voices, ways to get involved. But how do you navigate it, you know, as a young African-American man, you know, these spaces that have usually been dominated by white voices, but also by older voices?
I show up every day unapologetically myself. There are some in senior leadership in the Denver Public Schools that wake up every morning hating the fact that I'm elected to the school board. And I'm okay with that. And I'm glad that they wake up every single day like I do, but I continue to make sure that students are my forefront, and making sure DPS can start leading with bold actions. That's why I move so fast on things. Everybody wants to have a year-long conversation about how we do new things in the Denver Public Schools.
So true.
And I'm done with that. So that's why we moved so fast to get SROs out of schools, because we've been talking about it for 10 years.
Yeah.
It's nothing new. It's nothing that was just brand new out of the George Floyd killing. It was something that we worked on, that George Floyd's killing was a straw that broke the camel's back. And it honestly confused me to see leaders chanting Black Lives Matter on a Saturday in Civic Center Park and then turned around on a Monday and said, no, but keep police officers in black and brown neighborhoods.
Yeah.
You know, I love that. This year in our building, we taught about, we did Black Lives Matter at school week, right? And so one of the lessons I taught my kids was about the school to prison pipeline and the SRO data, you know, the impact of having SROs in schools on black and brown kids is, it's clear that it's so negative. And so, like, I really appreciate you for, like, spearheading and pushing on that. I think it's just critical for our kids. So also kind of thinking about, like, you know, navigating these spaces and showing up in your authentic self, what do you think kind of help you? Like, I know, like, the young generation, y'all are bold. Y'all are bold. Y'all do things that amazes me. And like, I used to be one of these older cats who's like, you got to be patient. You got to wait. And like, I've been inspired by the youth, you know, over the last 10 years to say, no, what are we waiting for? Let's do it. Let's do it now, you know? What gave you that ability to show up in your authentic self? Do you think it had anything to do with your education, or do you think there's something else that, like, you brought with you that's innately part of you that maybe you grew up with or brought from home or from manual, from your life? What do you think?
I think it really, for me, started at Manual, because learning the history of my school and learning the history of where we have been as a people in this city, it always, Manual seems to be the epicenter for greatness. It seems to be a school that often always has the most changes, whether that be in school leaders or teachers or the way that the school is ran. Manual High School taught me how leaders evolve and how they unapologetically show up for community. And when I think of that, I think about, like, Councilwoman Candy Sitabaka, who unapologetically showed up and ran for city council when she was told, there's no way you're going to defeat the city council president. You don't have enough money. And she got her start out of Manual High School, out of them closing Manual and then becoming a new school in the Bennett administration. And then I also think about Director Chantel Lewis, who has shown up on a board of RTD directors that are predominantly held by those in their 60s and 70s, who even has a black board member that said, I don't see myself as black. I see myself as human. And those are the things that she has to show up to work with every single day. And I took that and said, how can I show up into the school board in a space to where I'm not going to be bullied into accepting the status quo, or having to look my constituents or teachers in the eyes and saying, I didn't fight hard enough for you because I didn't try hard enough. And so I get up every day with the mission of, we're going to get something done. And again, change is uncomfortable, and people are upset about SROs. They're upset about gender X restrooms, et cetera. But people were also upset about slaves being freed. They were also upset about people having the right to vote. Also upset about a President Barack Obama. So they have to understand that change sometimes is uncomfortable, but we make the right moves because it's what's best for our kids.
I think that this has been the most compelling part of just watching the work that you've been doing. Really, frankly, since you ran, the notion that we're not just going to talk about the things that need to happen, we're going to act, and we're going to act quickly, and then we're not going to be complacent. I think this has been the most impressive thing, that, you know, following the removal of the official decision to remove Denver police from Denver schools, immediately after that, I was like, okay, now we have a part of this city that is named after a Klansman, so let's do something about that. And then, you know, and it's funny because I live in that part of the city, and it was amazing to just see, like, how quickly people's tone changed from the previous times that we had attempted to initiate change in the name. It was just amazing to see that. And there's a feeling among a lot of white middle-class folks that, you know, well, let's just placate these loud leaders and then they'll go away. Well, you haven't gone away. You've said, okay, now let's talk about ethnic studies in schools. Now let's talk about what we name schools that are full of black and brown children. And I think that's the thing that is really incredible to me. So you've been able to, or you found your way into a national spotlight. Talk a little bit about that, because there's a lot of folks who are kind of like, Tay Anderson is on the school board. What's he doing trying to fight with Kamala Harris? What's he doing on CNN? That doesn't have anything to do with his job. Can you speak to that a little bit? Because I think as your profile has elevated and as you've brought others with you, and you've provided safe spaces for young people to demonstrate and provided a voice for folks who don't feel like they are heard, talk about this national spotlight and what the implications have been for you and what they may be for the work that you're doing in schools and beyond.
Yeah, so on a national spotlight, I would say, like, highlighting the Kamala Harris remarks of saying it's not wise right now for us to nominate somebody who has a history of locking up black people.
Yeah.
No matter what your skin color is. I mean, in Denver, we always talk about skin folk ain't kin folk, right?
Yeah.
I'm not knocking her record as a U.S. Senator, because I think sure. that she's been a kick-ass U.S. Senator.
Yeah.
But when you have sent parents to jail over their child of not being in school, that's an issue for me, and that has to be talked about, especially if you're buying for a heartbeat away from the presidency. And yep. so, of course, as a voter, as somebody who could be a future constituent of Kamala Harris, I have to make sure that my voice is being heard when I think about the concerns, especially the concerns that I've heard from black parents in that area of California, of saying, I was affected by those policies. So I can't have that be a national policy that we one day will see. But I will say, on a national spotlight where people try to tell me of know your place and stay in your lane.
Yeah.
My lane is about children. It's about making sure that Denver Public Schools has authentic leadership to look forward to, but also to make sure that young people are not just a footnote in today's society. I think a lot of people like to go to young people and say, we need your voice. But then when we start speaking up unapologetically, they're like, maybe not that much voice.
whoa, don't say all that. You're Hang like, on. You asked me to talk.
Hang on, when we said we need your voice, we didn't really need this much of it.
Whoa. And that's something that I get a lot. I get that even from people here in Denver. They're like, why are you going after the statues? Well, maybe we shouldn't have put up statues in the first place.
That's
have a history of oppressing individuals or murdering or killing people. Like, when we talk about Columbus, people are trying to defend Christopher Columbus, a man who never stepped foot in the United States of America.
Yeah.
He if we want to start talking about Christopher Columbus, I'm hoping that all of those that are arguing for his statue to continue to be placed there will also argue for statehood for Puerto Rico. So those are the things that I hope that we start talking about in our society, that we can't continue to be a society that consistently honors those who have fought their careers off to keep people of color in their chains or keep them oppressed. And finally, to that note, on the national level, these are issues that people need to understand. We're elevating here in Denver. People think Denver is like Wakanda for white people. Like, there's just nothing bad that can happen here.
White Wakanda.
That'd be Asgard, right? That'd be Asgard.
Asgard. They think nothing bad can happen here, and that we're just a progressive little liberal city.
Yep.
But little they know that it wasn't until George Floyd's death, until we started highlighting that Elijah McClain died in our sister city of Aurora, that we had Michael Marshall. Like, we have to be able to use that national spotlight to put Denver in the news, to say we might be a Democratic city that's controlled by all Democrats on every single level of government, but again, we have to remember that just because you have a certain label behind your name or a certain skin color does not mean you what's best for the people. And we have to make sure that people are seeing that, because leaders are quick to call out negative and divisive political ads, but are complacent and silent when it comes down to law enforcement officers that are still patrolling the street that have a history of murdering black people.
Period.
No, and that's what I love, like, about the movement right now, is I feel like people are using momentum, right? And so, like you said, you're not stopping at you know, George Floyd, you know, like, it has to keep going. So let's go for the statues, let's get the SROs, all the things that we've been talking about. This, like, we have to keep pushing on this. And so, like, I just think that's so important. So, like, in this moment of the movement, like, what's your vision for community schooling in Denver going forward? You know, because I think that's kind of like the big movement, or the abolition of traditional education in Denver.
See, this is why I really like I think that sometimes we beat up on innovation in our system as a Denver Public Schools because it's implemented in the wrong way. I think innovation can be implemented in a right way that works to respect the rights of our educators and their contract, that can also respect the rights of our students, and that also doesn't turn our schools into a system where we are ran by outside networks. And so I strongly believe that when we talk about community schooling and with curriculum change, I think we should be able to envision, what does an anti-racist district look like that's led by community? I believe that the school board's role should be just really fulfilling what the ask of our community is. I strongly believe in the philosophy of community-driven, district-supported, but I also fear that there is not enough support at the district level to push those ideas forward. I think a lot of people will hop on those bandwagons and say community schools are great, curriculum change is great, but then they'll never actually make the change because, again, change is uncomfortable. And so to that, I would like for us to really make sure that we are funding community schools. I think one of the things that we run into a barrier in education is that not only are we getting hitting a funding curve from COVID, but before COVID, we also had funding issues, and Colorado was one of the worst states in the nation for funding education. Like, yeah. We got Alabama and Mississippi, states that have 10 people in them, beating Colorado in education. That's ridiculous. So we have to do more with our advocacy at the state level to saying, if you bold, if you unapologetic about getting money in education, then go forward and try to repeal Tabor. Bring it to the people so that we can vote on it. Make us educated around what is Tabor and what is the Gallagher Amendment. And then we would have more money in our schools to be able to execute community schooling, a diverse and multicultural teaching through our curriculum, and to make sure we have Black and brown teachers. But the key to keeping Black and brown teachers is treating them with respect and paying them well. If they know that they can go to Cherry Creek and get a better opportunity and work with majority white students, they'll go do that over coming to Denver Public Schools.
Yeah, we've seen it. We've seen it.
That they love to get paid less, and it happens every day. Like, I look at Cherry Creek's principal list, they got dope Black women running school in Cherry Creek, of man, all white students,
man.
But we can't even get a Black woman at Denver Discovery to stay because we treated her so badly over a $300 reprimand.
Yeah, it's wild. Incredible. No, I mean, and this is something that Kevin and I have talked about a lot, is that, you know, when you talk about the abolition of these systems that further oppressive tendencies within schools, one of those things has to do with who's in our classrooms. And, you know, we have a pipeline problem because disproportionately white middle-class women are in a better position to not get paid to work for an entire year while they do their internships and while they take their classes, right? Where I've known countless Black and brown people who've wanted to become teachers could not do it, because you just can't live that way, and you don't have a trust fund, and you can't just live off your parents, you know, if you're coming from a working class Black and brown community. And, you know, to your point around community schools, I did have a question about this, because it's a concept that I think is critical if we are to progress, not only as a Denver Public Schools, but as a system of schooling in this country. How do we prevent notions of separate but equal from infecting a community school's model? So for example, I was at Slavin's a couple of years ago coaching middle school basketball, and we went into their beautiful gym, and I was like, this is amazing. How did you get this? And the athletic director, who's a friend of mine, he's like, well, you know, the parents wanted a gym, and so they fundraised, and now we have a gym. So how would we, you know, you mentioned, you know, conceptualizing a district that is top to bottom anti-racist. How do we prevent those types of things from happening within a so-called community school or innovation school model?
I think one of the ways that we can do that is by making sure that the leadership supports that vision. I think that's something that we have lacked in this district, is principals that have the autonomy to really, one, work with their communities, and two, to work with they're given broken schools, and predominantly those who are given broken schools are Black and Brown leaders. And we're setting them up for failure. Like, I think of Hallett and Principal Jefferson that's at that school, who was given a school that was like, it was already the Titanic on its final leg of sinking. And she was told to go in with duct tape and to go patch the hole and get the ship afloat within one school year. And she can't do the innovative things as a Black woman or a Black leader in the district because she doesn't have the time nor the tools to do so. When you send somebody in with duct tape to go fix a ship, that's not going to, obviously it's not going to work. And
not
so,
even that stuff from the infomercial. What's that rubber stuff? That
Flex Seal.
Flex Seal. What about Flex Seal, Tay? Are you saying we need Flex Seal?
Yeah, Flex Seal. Look, don't, don't.
Okay, okay. We need to go ahead and pull a ship up next to the sinking ship and tell everybody on the new ship.
That's right.
Afloat. Because there's no point of us going into schools to, that are already sinking and saying, we're going to try to pull this sinking ship up, knowing that we've tried that for 10 years when we haven't thought about, well, have we thought about pulling up a new boat to really think about how we can rethink what our old ship was with the, with a new system and with a new, with new, a new look. And so I think that's what Nick Dawkins at Manual High School was trying to do. Yeah. He was given a, like, Manual High School has had over 11 principals in the span of less than 15 years.
Man.
As, so, as many principals as the Broncos have had quarterbacks.
And so, yeah. I'm a Chiefs person, so
yeah. Oh, that's all right, brother. It's all right.
I can be the happy medium. I'm still boycotting the NFL.
What? I'll get back to you. Let's stay with Tay. I got a question about that.
I just think that we have to be able to support those school leaders in those environments, but also, furthermore, we have to be able to get rid of the Karens in the classroom. And I know people are going to be very triggered with that statement, and they're going to be like, "Oh my god!"
We're going to call it, that's what we're going to put in the episode.
Karens in the classroom.
And so I want people to really understand that getting rid of SROs is not just is not the eradication of us getting rid of a system that poorly knows how to accept that some students come with different learning curves. And so we also have to start talking about the root cause of those who sit in our classrooms as educators and as administrators that are very quick to send a Black or Brown child out of the classroom actually try to figure out what's the root cause. That's why I'm not a fan of like the whole grit philosophy.
Oh, because man. It
teach us to actually understand what is the child going through at home that they're bringing in. Because walking into a classroom doesn't change anything but a scene or a setting, a setting for them. And so.
Well, yeah. I imagine that when you were a person affected by homeless as a senior in high school, I'm fairly certain you had a good amount of grit. You didn't need anybody
to show grit
because getting into that classroom and claiming your education under the conditions you were trying to serve, that was gritty. If we're going to talk about gritty,
not a degree of grittiness.
I mean, that's the thing is that we've got this very, like, I've always posed this question to folks. It's like, well, what if every single child that comes into your classroom is exactly the way they are supposed to be? What if their personality and their flair and their strength and their outspokenness, all of those things are things that are what they are supposed to be. And all we need to do is support them in their goals, right? What if we just had that conversation about kids? But you know, I really, that point about Karens in the classroom really resonates with me because I think for too long, we've got this really myopic view of what a successful young person looks like. And this colonizer's philosophy of turning a child into something different so they can be quote unquote successful. So I appreciate you saying that. Such an important point to make.
And then also success is whatever you make of it, right? It's not like that success is always getting a child college ready and getting them into an Ivy League school or getting them to their tuition paid, because college ain't for everybody. And I'm a prime example of it. Like, people try to tell me the only way I would be successful is to be in a four-year college and all this other stuff, and now I'm their boss. And so, like, those are the things that we have to be able to start letting people know and letting our kids know, is that there's not one track to success. And I'm tired of us preaching the philosophy of the only way our kids will make it in the world is that if they go get a piece of paper. And I do applaud those who go to college and do the work, but I also want us to start uplifting our trades and our other apprenticeships that students can go into because there are a lot of students now that make more money than a first year teacher, and they didn't even go a single year of college. They went and got an apprenticeship or did a union trade.
Yeah. I mean, and the other issue I have with the college readiness thing is that college readiness is a two-way street. It isn't just about what we in ECE through 12 do to teach kids skills and knowledge and those kinds of things. It's also about whether those colleges really want everybody.
Yeah.
Like, it's about whether they are prepared to teach whoever walks through their doors, because it'd be a very different conversation if that's what they're doing. So college readiness is about colleges being ready for our youth as well. So I think that there's a two-way street there that isn't often addressed. They wag their fingers at us for what they think we're failing to do for young people. But at the end of the day, college isn't for everybody, and that's on college.
and they look at their failure rates. It's about 50% at some of the best of them.
Hey, good thing there's no SPF for colleges.
You know, I know we don't have a lot of time left, Tate, but like I want to get back to this point about like creating the schools that communities need. And I think this is near and dear to me and Gerardo's heart right now, because our school has a red rating. We are, you know, on watch. We are getting extra supports, all of this stuff, you know, and throughout this process of kind of like our school kind of being, I guess, revised and kind of, I've been kind of shocked at the lack of community input. And so I just wondered, like, how do you stay in touch with the community so you hear all the voices, you know, of your constituents, and not just, you know, the people with the privilege or time to engage, you know, those Karens who show up at board meetings and have time to write letters and do all of this stuff. Yep. What are some of the ways, you know, as a young person that you are able to just stay in touch with the community?
Yeah, I mean, even to the board meeting part is like, that's why I'm working on getting more accessibility to board meetings and taking the board meeting out of 1860 Lincoln and rotating them throughout schools, because we can't ask people to come to education on a Thursday afternoon in downtown Denver. One, that sets up a power of privilege itself, but that's why in my first month of office, I pushed forward to get free parking downtown for Denver Public Schools board meetings, because it's one barrier to a systemic issue. It's like SROs. It's not a cure, but it's a, we can cure the symptom. And I would even go further to say, how do we stay in touch with people and really hear voices is, through social media. I'm the only board member that's very active on social media, whether that be Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat, etc. I make myself accessible because I don't want there to be a barrier for people to contact me. There's a reason why there's a phone number on my website. People can pick up the phone and then they call me. And people are like, oh, I didn't expect you to answer. I expected
a hello?
A staffer, voicemail.
Yeah. Sometimes I'm not able to get to every phone call or to every email, but I am able to look at those who are reaching out, trying to engage. That's why I put out today on Twitter of like, I'm not comfortable with us making a decision around the plan to reopen schools this month, because science is ever changing and it's evolving. Like right now we're seeing across, like we told people you could not have any sort of in-person graduation period. Then a week later it was, all right, you can do drive-through graduations. Then a week after that, it was like, well, you can do graduations and then have them do like a drive-in style. Then a week after that, we got Douglas County announcing they're going to do an in-person graduation in the stadium. So like we really screwed our high school seniors out with being patient and letting them have their moment. And I feel very bad because I fought so hard for us to make sure that we had still some sort of continuity in our systems for our seniors, because you don't work 12 years to be handed a diploma over the computer. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm hoping we are able to start to slow down the way that we're moving on certain things. There are certain things that we, like SROs in schools, that are given. Like those don't need us to do a kumbaya circle with police. We need to be able to make sure that our schools have proper resources first. But there are things like around, when do you return to school? Those are the things where I'm like, hey, we haven't had this conversation yet. If this is a new conversation, let's slow down and let's have a talk about it. And let's at least alert parents their options. I don't want to roll out something that says, yeah, we're going to have in-person learning, but no assemblies, no field trips, no this, no that. Because eventually when you lock a child in a room for 8 hours a day with the same teacher, it's basically teaching them the school to prison pipeline mindset. You're going to be able to have required, you get to go to the restroom at this time. Like, that's going to literally be setting up the definition of prison in a school. Yeah. If we're going to bring kids back, then it needs to either be a way where students can still interact with one another at respecting social distancing and respecting the situation we're in. And it also has to be in accordance with how do we make sure school is still school? Because this will be traumatizing for a young learner who's in elementary school, who is developing their brain. And then they get to high school and they're like, well, I spent the first 3 years of my education career going through a system where I was in a straight line all day, didn't get to leave my classroom, no snacks, no recess. Like, that's ridiculous. So I'm hoping together as a community, we can come together, figure out the best solutions for our kids, but also understanding that the time is ticking and change can't wait any longer.
You know, that is like, I love that point about, you know, coming back, because I deal with those questions from my daughter, who's an eighth grader, you know, and she, the other day, she's like, well, can we have passing periods? Can we talk in the morning, you know, before we get there? And I'm like, I don't know. I have no idea. I don't think they know, you know, but I appreciate the time, because I do feel like there's this rush, like in all of it, is to resume normalcy. And as Gerardo has pointed out throughout, you know, this quarantine and self isolation, that, you know, it normal before was not great. It was actually pretty bad, you know? And so I think we have time to really spend some time and talk to the community about what people need to feel really safe and comfortable. And I think a lot of working class families, you know, our Black and Brown families, they are just trying to do what they think is best. And I think they look to the schools. And if we say, send your kids, those are the kids who are going to, you know, be forced to deal with this. And our kids of privilege, our white kids throughout the city, their parents will have them at home. They will have private tutors. They'll be in private schools. They'll be enrolled in online enrichments and things like that.
And our kids will suffer. I think this is our opportunity. This is our only opportunity, unless COVID happens again, to destroy education as we know it and to rebuild something new. That's why it is imperative we start talking about curriculum changes, imperative we start imagining a school system without policing, imperative that we have educators of color in our classroom. This is our one shot to be able to say education, the way that it was built and the way that we modeled it after for the last 150 years has not worked for kids of color in this system. This is our only shot. This is like God saying, hey, I'm giving you the only opportunity to fix something. I'm hoping that we actually do something about it. That's why I've been unapologetically myself, because I'm not going to wait until somebody tells me to do something at this point. I was elected again with 67,000 voters, over 82% of Denver neighborhoods, with 51% of the vote in a three-way race, not to sit complacent and to say, I'm just going to accept the status quo. But I ran on the antithesis of destroying the Tom Boesberg administration and ran on making sure that we put teachers first, our students first, and our community first. And ultimately, getting to the point to where when people look at DPS, they don't have to tell a bad story about their experience with us, but they can say that is the best district you'll ever be in the Denver public and in the state of Colorado, whether that be a teacher, a community member, or a student.
Period. Director Tay Anderson, we know we need to respect your time and let you get to your next commitment. We are humbled, we're honored, and this was an amazing conversation, a great way to kick off our summer 2020 mixtape. Thank you for being here with us, Tay. And we have a way that we like to conclude things here. We want to encourage everybody to get involved and follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Dope Teachers, like us on Facebook, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify as well. You know, Director Anderson, I just want to say it's so encouraging to hear the vision that you're sharing with us on this show, because it's got me excited to get back to work as soon as I can and really start thinking about what it looks like to abolish education as we know it, and abolish schooling as we know it, so that we can have quality education. You know what I mean? So we have a way to conclude things. I'll ramble a little bit, and then all together we'll say, stay dope. Does that sound okay to you?
Cool.
All right. So for the eminent Kevin Adams, for Director Tay Anderson of the Denver Public Schools Board of Education, I am Gerardo Munoz. And on this sunny June day, moving into the later part, the early part of the summer, we want to wish you and your loved ones and your families and friends today, tomorrow, and always stay woke.